Hello and welcome everybody for today's webinar. My name is Ashish Bhatia and I'm Program Manager with Microsoft. I host the Azure Machine Learning webinar series. Every Tuesday we have a new learning topic. Before we move on, I have a couple of quick poll questions today to get a sense of who's with us. So if you take the opportunity of picking the question and selecting the option, I'll give everybody a few seconds. Okay. And the next one is about your role. Okay, thank you. A quick word on the webinar format today. This is a 1 hour long session. We'll have like around 40 minutes of talking and demos and presentation, and we'll get 15 minutes for Q&A. Feel free to put in any questions in the Q&A window at any point of time. I'll be kind of sorting them out and we'll address them at the end of the session. The session will be recorded and it will be available on demand on the same registration link that you can use to come in today. We'll send up a follow-up mail with the recording of the session and the slide set. The topic for today is an overview of Azure Machine Learning Marketplace. The speaker today with us is Luis Cabrera. Luis is a senior program manager in Azure Machine Learning team. He's passionate about machine learning and interactive design. He's also worked with teams like Bing, the Microsoft Surface, the original Surface, and Windows Phone teams. Over to you, Luis.
Now. Thank you. Thank you, Ashish. It's a pleasure to be here with you. And we'll start our presentation with about 2 or 3 minutes on what machine learning is, and then we'll delve into the marketplace. So the first question, and I cannot hear you unfortunately, but I want you to think of who is this octopus? And why will I start my presentation with the picture of an octopus? It turns out that this octopus, his name is Paul, and in 2010 he was more popular than Messi. In the World Cup. He actually predicted many of the World Cup game outcomes, and so he was really, really popular. Then in October that year, the octopus died. Maybe he was too tired of predicting World Cup scores. And then the next World Cup, a bunch of different people thought that maybe their pet or their animal could be Paul the Second. And I want you to think of okay, so which one was the best predictor for the 2014 World Cup? No, it's not the elephant. A lot of people say it's the elephant. In reality, it was Cortana. Cortana was able to predict 15 out of the 16 games. 15 out of the 16 final games, and. So this is really exciting, right? So Cortana, using machine learning techniques, was able to do it, which shows a little bit of the power of machine learning and predictive analytics in general. So what is, well, okay, so Cortana also predicted the Super Bowl and so forth. So what is machine learning, really? Machine learning is the ability to use data to solve very hard problems. One example of a very hard problem that can be used, that machine learning can be used for is, handwriting recognition. So it's very, very hard to write an algorithm that can detect any type of handwriting. Yet it has a lot of value, right? If you think of the post office, it has to sort millions of pieces of mail every day, and it would be very, very expensive to pay people to read addresses just to route letters in the right direction. Now, if we were to take an example of this this letter here, in the address there are many, many characters. There is, for instance, this character 2, and a human can quickly recognize, okay, that's a 2. But for computers, it's not so easy, especially because people have different ways of writing. And furthermore, imagine that you do write an algorithm that can use you know, maybe the inflection points in the character to tell what a 2 is. The moment that a new font comes out, then your character wouldn't work and it will be very hard to maintain. So machine learning is about generating a model that takes a piece of data such as that 2 and can classify it into the actual number 2, right? So we take a little image and then we get as output a classification of that number. And the output of the machine learning process is actually this classifier itself. It's the classifier that will help us solve this problem. So how do we do it? We take a lot of training examples, a lot of scribbles in a sense, right? And in the case of the post office, they actually had a database, for instance, of what those scribbles connected to, right? So that scribbled 9 actually represents a 9 in the middle. The scribbled circle in the bottom right corner is an actual number 0, and so forth. So you need both pieces of information. You need the training examples, and we extract what we call features out of that, or features that we use to train the model. And then we have labels, which is the outcome of the algorithm. So if you have the input and the output, you can crunch that through machine learning. And then the output is this classifier. That's just one example of machine learning, just the hello world of machine learning, so that you have an idea of the needed inputs and outputs. But machine learning can be used to solve very serious problems that affect the industry and businesses today, right? Here are just a few examples of ways in which machine learning can help your business, from maybe predicting which of your customers are likely to leave you next month, customers that may not come back to your store, so you can act on that. Maybe you want to forecast the demands for a given product or forecast weather conditions. Maybe you want to track fraudulent transactions. And perhaps analyze where to place a store given a set of features so that you can predict the demand before you even build the store, right? These are fine machine learning problems, and they have a lot of value. So then the question then is why aren't we using machine learning more broadly in the industry? Why isn't machine learning used in your company, for instance, today? And there is a good reason for it. Historically, it's been pretty hard to do machine learning, right? It required you to find a unicorn called a data scientist. They're hard to find. They are expensive, and it requires a set of specialized skills to do machine learning, right? Furthermore, you were required to have a set of pretty beefy machines to do all the computation needed to generate a model. For instance, a data scientist in the past may have actually set up a cluster, a Hadoop cluster, for instance, to do some processing, right? So now you have to invest in human capital, you have to invest in equipment. In addition, it's you pay the data scientist, right? And the data scientist does a very good job generating a model that works for you. But then you need to operationalize it. You need to actually make it part of your end-to-end business practices, right? And that aspect is actually pretty hard because your data scientist speaks languages such as R and Python, but the software engineer that is helping you with operationalization speaks other languages. They speak C++, they speak Java, C#, right? So they cannot just take the model that their friendly data scientist created. They have to convert it somehow to a language that they can operationalize, right? So with that, you know, it will take a while to actually get the insights, and maybe by then the model itself has changed, right? Maybe by then the economics or conditions or assumptions under which you created the model will have changed, and then you will have to go through the loop all over again. So our desire and the vision of the Azure Machine Learning team is to make machine learning easy, to make it accessible, right? Not only to the data scientist and developer, but to everyone, to the information worker, to the actual consumer. We want machine learning to be part of everyone's lives, and we want to make it easy to extract the insights and the value of machine learning. And we're doing this in several fronts, and we have what we call the Azure Machine Learning Studio, and there have been other webinars on that earlier, so I'm not going to go into a lot of detail of how to use the Machine Learning Studio, but the concept is you have your data, and then we have a browser-based tool, and actually let me show you what that may look like. Here, it looks something like this, and then using this Machine Learning Studio, you can generate a model, and you can prepare a web service with just a few clicks that allows you to operationalize or put this service in production, right? So going back to my slide here, this is really the concept, right? You have data, you have the studio, and then you produce an API that can be called from anywhere. It all happens on the Azure cloud, so you don't need to install any equipment. Either your data scientist can be very efficient, or maybe it's somebody who is new to data science, to data science, and can learn how to use the studio pretty quickly, right? A lot of drag and drop set of tools and very good tutorials on how to use it. Now, right underneath that, there is what we call the marketplace, and that's where I'm going to spend most of my time today, which is I can take the web services that I created or the models that I created, and maybe they're valuable to my company, but they could also be valuable to many people in the world, right? And I will give you some examples of services that we have created that are very valuable to a lot of people. So in a sense, we're creating a new data science economy, right? The way I think of it is when I was a kid, and I am originally from Guatemala, when my dad needed a suit coat, he went to the tailor, and he would spend some time, you know, getting measured and picking some fabric, you know, the session will take probably 30 to 40 minutes. As a child, I remember that was kind of boring for me. And then, like a month later, the tailor will call my dad and say, okay, here is your suit coat. And then my dad will try it. Hopefully it will fit. And then he will have a new suit coat, right? So it took him a long time, right? Like at least a month and quite a bit of a hassle to get measured and so forth. Today, if either my dad or myself want a suit coat, I just go to the closest store or even online, and I have a variety, you know, hundreds of suit coats to pick from. If I go to a physical store, I can even try it there right away, and then 5 minutes later, I have paid for my suit coat and I am ready to go. So I know it's a metaphor, but why can't we do the same for machine learning and data science? There are many, many instances where you can create a model and then it can be useful to thousands of people around the world. And we want to make it easy for people to consume this end-to-end solution. So if you go to the Azure Marketplace, you will see the Machine Learning Marketplace section. And then inside there, you will see many end-to-end solutions. These solutions solve very specific business needs, and they don't require any data scientists, right? So you don't need to know any machine learning to use the offers in the marketplace. But don't be deceived. Even though the offers are relatively simple, underneath them, we are using state-of-the-art machine learning algorithms that have been used at Microsoft for many years. You know, for the last 10 years or so, algorithms that come from products like Bing, Xbox, Microsoft Research, and so forth. The best part is that one of the problems with adopting machine learning in the past was the cost, right? What if now you only paid for the actual usage of a model, right? So you only pay for what you need. You don't need to make a huge initial investment. So these are some of the machine learning applications that I'm talking about. We have more, but these are our strongest offers right now. Anomaly detection, I will not talk a lot about it in this presentation, but it has to do with being able to find anomalous points in a time series. One of the customers of anomaly detection is actually a big customer internally, which is SQL Azure. So SQL Azure is our database on the cloud, and they have a pretty stringent SLA, so 99.99%, something like that, right? Where it has to always be working. And the reason that they can do that is because they can predict when one of their machines is about to go down for some reason before it actually goes down, right? And then they can act on it without having to take the system down. So for instance, they are using anomaly detection, and the variable that they're tracking is the number of exceptions on a server, for instance. I'm going to talk a little bit more in detail about the rest, so I'm not going to discuss them in this slide. So let's go through them one by one. So the first one is product recommendations. Product recommendations have to do with being able to give you recommendations of items that your customers may be interested in. You use this all the time. Whenever you watch a Netflix movie and you're done watching it, you see a set of recommendations for you. That's a recommendations engine at work. Whenever you go to Amazon and are about to check out of your cart and it says, well, it looks like you bought these products, you may also want to buy this additional product. They do not hard code all that. They actually use machine learning in order to understand which products a customer is likely to purchase given a set of products that they are about to buy, right? So a recommendations engine solves those problems. It's really cool because it enables you to showcase products that are of interest to that user, but if you have a huge catalog, it is hard to bring up all the customers to the top of the users, right? It's not about just saying, oh, these are the most popular products. It's really about saying these are the most popular products for you, right? Right? It's about providing a very personalized experience. One example where we integrated it, and I will show you what the files look like when we generated the recommendations engine for Channel 9, is we just took the usage or the views of videos on Channel 9 and created a model for them so that now when you're done watching a video, they tell you what videos you may be interested in. So let me share my screen, and I will show you how you will go about actually getting started creating a recommendations engine. I will just kind of give you a few hints so that you can get started. Also, I did produce a Channel 9 video that goes into a little bit more detail of the recommendations engine. So the first thing is, actually, let me go to the data market. So if you go to the marketplace here, you can see the machine learning services that we have. They currently show both on the Microsoft Azure Marketplace, and some of them also appeared in manage.windowsazure.com, the Azure Management Portal. In this case, we're talking about recommendations, so let me go straight to that offer. So a few things to point out. The first one is that you can generate many transactions per month for free. You don't need a credit card to sign up in the Microsoft Azure Marketplace in the data market version. And so you can get started and do everything that I'm doing here for free. To get started, and once you get a little bit more serious, then you have to pay for your usage, right? The easiest way to get started with recommendations for me is actually to take a look at the sample application. So if you click on the link here, that will download a sample application. I already downloaded it before this presentation. So I'm just going to show you what the C# file looks for that. And really, if you kind of follow each of the steps there, if you follow each of the steps here, it's actually very, very easy to use. I'm going to tell you just a few pointers. It will require your account key, which you can create in the data market, and your email. And once you have done that, really what you need as input is a catalog file, and that's the line that uploads the catalog file into the service, and your transactions. So I'm going to show you what those look like for the Channel 9 example that we were talking about. So this is the little program that I use. So the catalog looks something like this. It's really a set of entries, just a bunch of rows, where it has the user ID. In this case, is some kind of GUI. Sorry. This is the item ID. My bad. My apologies. This is the item ID and the name of the item, and in this case these are all just normal entries. So it's just catalog. Item ID, information about the item, and you can imagine how we will have like hundreds or thousands of that for the videos on Channel 9, for instance, right? So the catalog is just all the items that you own in this very simple form. So, and then the usage files, these ones are actually transactions that the users have done in the past. These ones do have the first field in the rows is the user ID. Then, so it says that user 4033 and so forth watched a video with this video ID, and actually in this case they just clicked on it. It has the time and that they click on it, right? So imagine that you can provide all the clicks that people have done. In some situations, it looks like the users were not authenticated, and then they use the IP address as a proxy for the user ID, and that works fine as well. So once you have these two types of files, you can build a model, which is this next step here. And once you have built a model in the sample itself, you can see that you can actually here it's actually testing the model, but it passes two items and it says, given these two items that I have produced, can you tell me the recommendation that that the user is actually going to want to see? What are the items with high probability of the user watching in this case, or in some other case, it may be purchasing, right? The action in this case was clicks, but an action could be purchase as well. So given previous purchase transactions, now we can predict which items you are likely to want to purchase in the future. So very, very straightforward. I just needed those two files, and now I can invoke recommendation. Okay, very good. Let me go back to the slides. And we're going to talk about another service that we have called basket analysis. It's very similar to recommendations, but it has a small twist to it, which is basket analysis uses not only the purchases, but it also takes into consideration the actual transaction. So it will say, oh, people that have purchased this camera, for instance, are also very likely to purchase this this software, Corel Paint Shop Pro, for instance, in this case, in the same transaction. So this is a great service to use in the product pages as shown here. So both of them are applied very well to retail, both recommendations and the frequently bought together service. So, okay, right, let me continue. One, we have been working with a company called JJ Foods. They have been great adopters of our technology, but they also agreed for us to get a little bit of insight on how the services work for them. So in the case of frequently bought together, out of pretty much out of every five recommendations that we provided, the user actually clicked through one of the recommendations. So that's great, right? That means that now the users are actually going a little bit deeper into your catalog, and they are likely to buy those products. In addition, for recommendations, using the recommendations engine at the point where people are about to check out, they recommended a few products there, and these increased the purchases that they made by 5%. They had a 5% conversion rate, which is awesome, right? If I could tell you that you could increase your revenue by 5% just by adding this service, I mean, wouldn't you do it, right? Another service that we have is customer churn prediction. So this one has to do with predicting which of your customers are likely to leave your business ahead of time, right? So that they don't actually leave. So you want to predict the future in order to change it. And we have an experience that can provide you the probability of every customer leaving, right? Imagine if you were in a call center and you already knew how likely any customer in your business is likely to leave, the probability that any of them is likely to leave. And then whenever you have a service call, you could prioritize the calls of those customers that may be frustrated with your business or may have some concerns that are likely to cause them to leave, right? Also, if you know that they are going to leave, you can spend your money on targeting the group that you think has more likelihood of staying, right, after you talk to them. So let me actually give you a demonstration of the churn experience. Actually, let me walk you through the experience. So if you go to the data market, you have customer churn prediction, and then you can click on the interactive experience here. And there is a video there explaining what churn is and so forth. You can get started, enter your credentials. And once you do that, you can create a new project. And here it actually allows you to upload some data of your transactions, and this is the schema that is used. In other words, we just want to know, like, the user ID, when they interacted with you, that's the timestamp. What did they do? Did they buy something? Did they just visit you, for instance? If you have different locations, the location of the customer, and what they purchased, right, or looked at, right? So how many and the value and the quantity, right? So using many rows of data that look like this, we can use machine learning techniques to find the patterns of consumption of the different customers and see the customers that have left you in the past, what pattern of consumption have they used, and are there any of your current customers that are likely to follow that pattern of consumption? That's what happens. Then we create a model. I already produced one here. After you specify what churn means to you, and we can give you stats on the model. For instance, in this case, I know using this leaf chart, I know that 10% of my population. You don't have to understand everything about leaf charts here, but if you look at the 10 on the x-axis and I go up, then that intercepts on 5 on the left end. And the way you read it is that 10% of your population is more likely to leave than 5 times more likely to leave than the average customer, right? So in that case, I could target that 10% of the population because they have a high likelihood, high likelihood of leaving, right? And we actually do produce, once you create a job based on the data that you want to analyze, we actually can give you the results of the likelihood of each of your customers leaving. And I already opened that in Excel. And the output looks something like this. So you have the user IDs, and then the probability of them leaving you. I can sort by probabilities here, so I can see which ones are the high, which of my customers have the highest probability of leaving. And as you can see, maybe I want to target these 28 or so customers who have greater than 50 chance probability of leaving me, right? The beauty of this is that now it's only 28 customers that I have to interact with as opposed to hundreds of customers. 28, maybe I even give them a call, right? And then check if they have any concerns, if they like my pricing, if they like my service, and so forth, right? Actually, let me stop here and show you the experience that JA Food had. So JA Foods, they were able to retain, they were able to predict the top 200 customers that were likely to leave, and they were able to retain 45% of them after talking to them. In the past, JA Foods was really trying to solve this problem, but they were only able to retain about 17% of the people that they were talking to. So you can see that they were able to increase their chances of retention because they were talking to the right people, right? Furthermore, you may decide that you don't want to talk to a few folks because they are so likely to leave that they're going to leave you no matter what. So maybe you don't even want to invest your time on them, right? Okay, changing gears a little bit, we have another service called Text Analytics. Text Analytics has been really hot. A lot of people have been asking us to use this service lately. And it's actually a very simple service. If you provided a sentence, it will tell you whether what the sentiment of the sentence is. And sentiment means what people feel given what they wrote. So it could be positive or neutral or negative. We give you a result between 0 and 1. So 1 means that any number close to 1 means that the person is happy with the statement that they made. And you know, something closer to 0 will be that they're frustrated or mad, right? And furthermore, we can analyze the unstructured text and see what people are actually talking about. We can look for the key phrases. In this example, it was a wonderful hotel with unique decor and friendly staff. The key phrase extractor told us that they are talking about a wonderful hotel, unique decor, and friendly staff, right? So let me show you this in action. It's always fun to use the text analytics service. Once again, sharing my screen. And I'm going to type something, I don't know. Webinars are a great way to disseminate information. Very helpful or something, right? Very helpful. If someone were to write that about webinars, for instance, right, and we were to analyze it, oops, something bad happens. My apologies. I don't know what's going on, and I swear this is the first time I have seen this error, and it happened on my webinar. My apologies. So let me try one more time. I just wondered if something is going on. Testing the connectivity today. Okay, let's try that. Okay, so I don't know what happened there, but this is a neutral phrase, right? I am talking about the connectivity, but I'm not saying whether it's good or bad. Now let me change that and actually say, it is scary to demo live. I don't know, something negative. I am super frustrated. I don't know, something like that, right? And then if I were to analyze it, that's a very negative phrase. That's not my current sentiment. I'm actually excited to talk to you. But you can see how the system can recognize the sentiment of the customer, right? So if I stop here, now going to my next slide. So there are many places where you can use text analytics. Maybe you want to track the sentiment of your brand or products as you make the, business decisions, right? So you can see how your business decisions have affected what people think about particular facets of your business. Maybe if you have customer support, you could tell just by the type of questions how what the sentiment is, right? And then maybe prioritize those calls where people are frustrated. Furthermore, you may want to review, based on the key phrases, what the sentiment is associated with each of those key phrases. We did an analysis not long ago of one of our customers, and it was very interesting to see in particular the key phrases that had negative sentiment associated with them. Because very quickly we could tell, even though we're not experts in the business, right, we could tell what the pain points were and when they had them. So for instance, they had some order problems around Christmas time, and we could quickly tell that just by analyzing their reviews. So this gives you a quick introduction, 10:40, so this gives you a quick introduction of the Azure Machine Learning services. I went through the first party services. I didn't go through the whole production process or how you will publish a service, but that's something that definitely you can do, and we have good documentation on that as well. So with that, I would love to open the forum for questions, and feel free to ask any questions. There are no bad questions here, please.
Thanks, Luis. A great, great session. Let me pick up a few questions that come on the QA window. The first one is for James. He's asking, I have 250 million user interaction records, and we suspect some of them are fraud generated by machines. However, we could not label which records are fraud or not. Any suggestion on what approach to address for this issue?
That's a very, very good question. So this is what we will call an unsupervised learning problem, because you want to find records that are anomalous, right? Just like we have the anomaly detection service that works on time series, right? You could do something where you can create a model and look for anomalies in your traffic, right, or your visits. So I don't think that any of the services in the marketplace can meet your needs right now end to end, but you can definitely generate an anomaly detection specific for your business using the Azure Machine Learning Studio and productize it. What I would recommend, and actually let me go back to my screen. Let me see. Okay. And I'm changing topics a little bit, but that's okay. So if you go to the Azure Machine Learning Studio, I will recommend you take a look at the gallery and see if there are any examples on fraud detection. I mean, we can actually try to do it right now. Fraud. There were no actually there is a very good example on and with several steps on fraud detection in the Azure Machine Learning Studio. So what I would recommend is you walk through each of these steps. They are very well documented. They were created by our team. And once again, I went to gallery.azuremail.net, and then I searched for fraud. Let me click on one of them just so you have an idea of what you're getting into. And it explains the process for generating a fraud detection model. And it goes step by step. I hope this helps. Okay. Any additional questions?
Thanks, Luis. One of the questions is, does Microsoft have any right to the data? And the same person is asking another question, which is, are the tools HIPAA compliant?
Yeah. So that's a good question. So I'll answer the first one first, which is no, we don't, like the data is yours, right? You store it in let's say Azure Blob storage and so forth. And just like you have an Azure account, that's your data and you own it, right? We don't have rights or we don't have rights to your information, and we respect your information, right? We respect your privacy. Also, the other thing that I should point out is that there are services that don't require any of your information at training time, and there are services that do. For instance, the recommendations engine that I showed, it does require your data for training. The other one that I showed that was text analytics, for instance, since that's based on the English language, as an example, right, we don't require any of your data for training purposes. Obviously, you do need to pass your data for scoring, right? Okay, so that's the first part of the question. I don't think we're HIPAA compliant, but I'm not really sure. I will have to follow up on that. But really, the data is yours, and you could even just in the cases where you need it for training, if you're very concerned about it, there are two things that I will recommend. One is, even though we need your data, for instance, in the recommendations engine, right, we don't need to know exactly who is the customer, right? So we just need unique identifiers for customers, but we don't need to have any connection to the who the actual customer is, right? So in that case, one technique may be to, like, you know, just switch customer IDs for completely new random numbers, as long as you keep them, keep the transactions from the same customer with the same ID, right? But no connection to the actual customer name or address or any of their personal information, right? The other aspect is, because you only need it for training time, after you train, you could remove it from the service. At that point, it's no longer needed. You already have a model, right? And the model doesn't actually have the data itself. It's just a bunch of weights. Okay, next question.
Thanks, Luis. The next question is from Mona. She's asking, are you planning to add unsupervised learning algorithms to Azure?
There are already in the studio, there are already unsupervised learning algorithms. Text analytics is actually one of them, right? Ngram detection. There are already unsupervised learning algorithms on the studio. So I think maybe the question is what services we may offer in the marketplace, which is maybe a related question. So right now, as you notice, we have been very focused on retail, and we're thinking there is a lot of demand there. We also have seen a lot of demand in the Internet of Things space, like anomaly detection and so forth. So we're very interested in prioritizing those areas. And then whether the algorithms are supervised or unsupervised is kind of secondary. It really depends on the business solution that people have hunger for, that they are interested in, and those are the ones that we will kind of bubble up. The other thing is that the marketplace is open to any publisher, right? So I just talked about a few first-party offers, but it doesn't prevent anyone else, including some of the people that may be listening to this presentation today, to actually produce an algorithm or a model and publish it in the marketplace and actually serve the world with it. Yeah. Next question.
Thanks, Luis. The next question is from Santosh. He's asking, do you know if there are any models to predict fault detection with sensors, like water temperature sensors?
Oh, okay. So I think that's a fair usage for anomaly detection service. So that's actually in the marketplace, right? So I showed it earlier. Let me go back to it. Imagine that you have a temperature sensor, right? And that each time you have a given value associated with that sensor. And then, actually, here, let me go to the documentation. It's probably better. So here, right? So you have some detection of temperature, right? And then all of a sudden, you see that there may be spikes or something that seems to the system anomalous, right? Now, the beauty of this is that you did not have to add heuristics for the system to understand what is valid or not valid, right? It just looks at all data to understand what seems correct or incorrect. So I think you can probably use, depending on your specific scenario, but you should definitely look at the anomaly detection service that we have in the marketplace already. Next question.
Thanks. So this one is from Ahmed Ali. Says, is there a package that can help with scheduling, satisfying some constraints?
With scheduling. No, I'm not aware of a package that helps you with that. That seems to me that may not be a machine learning problem. Depending on the constraints, I'm not sure, right? If it's about predicting the future based on past data, that may be a good machine learning problem. If it's just an optimization problem, it may not necessarily be machine learning. So sure. Yeah, I think we will almost need a little bit more detail there.
Okay, the next question is, this is more specific to neural network machine learning. Is there a way to implement other learning mechanism, for example, using multi-worm rather than backpropagation?
Oh, I see. So, well, that question is probably not a marketplace question because the marketplace goal is for you to not have to worry about what algorithms are being used underneath the hood. But I'll try to answer your question. If you, that's really a studio question. So if you look at studioazureml.net, you can look at the variety of algorithms that we have for machine learning. Here, let me just create a new experiment. Just a second. I don't know what's going on. I think something is going on with me connected to the webinar system that is making my internet very slow for some reason. But here, let me open one maybe. So here, I just wanted to show you here in the machine learning section, you can look at all the models that we have for initialization of that you will eventually connect to a training module, And you can see, for instance, let's say classification, you can see that we have both neural networks as well as logistic regression, you know, decision jungle, and so forth. So I would recommend you take a look at each of the options there, and each of them have like different ways that you can configure them, right? So you should take a look at each of them and the documentation of each of the modules. Next question.
The next question is, when do you plan to implement batch execution mode for Marketplace?
That's a fair question. So we are, I don't have any dates to share with you, otherwise I will have shared them earlier, but I do have something that we're working on that I would like to let people know is for text analytics, we have seen that there has been a lot of demand for scoring, not just one phrase at a time, but you know, but thousands of them, right? Because you may wanna like analyze a whole website or you know, a bunch of reviews or bugs that you're getting in a system or something like that, right? So we're actually actively working on the ability to send, you know, let's say in the order of thousands of rows at a time. And yeah, so that's something where we're making actually quite a bit of traction. So I can tell you that much.
Thanks.
Next question.
So another question related to text analytics. Pedro is asking, can you input different languages to the text analytics API?
Right now we support English only, but we're also working on multi-language support. So keep your eyes. Just kind of stay put for a second and hopefully soon. Next.
Okay. Thanks. Jay is asking, does AML support price optimization models?
Sorry, let me see if I can see the question. Does Azure AML price optimization models? Okay, so that will be a custom module that you will have to create in the studio. So we don't have a marketplace offer to do that right now. But you could definitely create something like that using the studio.
Okay. Another question from Gilbert Smith is, are there examples or experiments that use multiple marketplace products?
Well, yeah, I gave you one. JJ Foods is a company that has been using many of them. But yeah, I don't know if I can talk about other companies, but yes, the answer is yes. And I gave you one of them as part of the presentation.
Yeah, then another question from Mona is, does this differ from IBM Watson and Bluemix platform?
You know, I don't want to comment on Watson and, or what their strengths or weaknesses may be. But from what I have seen, and you may want to do your own research, is that Watson is more of a data analysis tool. Like it can tell you information about your current data as opposed, more like descriptive analytics as opposed to predictive analytics, right? Yeah, so I will leave it at that. That's just my impression from what I saw from them.
Sridhar is asking, can I analyze SharePoint farm data? If yes, then how?
Well, so you will have to, let's say that you had in SharePoint a bunch of reviews, right? I'm just gonna take one example. The marketplace offers are not tied to a particular technology, right? They are not tied to SharePoint or even Azure. I mean, like even though we use Azure, you don't have to have an Azure subscription today to use the marketplace offers, right? So if you own SharePoint, right, then as long as you can extract the data out of SharePoint into you know, a set of rows, there isn't any reason why you couldn't, like, for instance, do text analysis on each of those rows. But you will have to look at the SharePoint APIs as to how to extract that data depending on the format that you have it in.
Okay,
Next
thanks.
question.
Harshal is asking, are there any health and safety modules predicting the next occurrence of an injury? Interesting question.
Well, you know, so, okay, so I think we have seen a pattern of questions where people are saying, like, well, is there such a model, and then where the model is something kind of custom, right? So you could definitely generate a model like that, and you will have to have some data, right, where you say, like, okay, given these health parameters or these input parameters, then the maybe the injury, you know, is happen, or someone is likely to come back to a hospital, right? That may be a fair question to ask, right? Given a certain pattern of actions in a given hospital, do they come back, or are they going to be injured again, right? That's a fine machine learning problem. As long as you have the data, then it's actually not that hard to generate such a model in the machine learning studio.
Okay, fair enough. The question from Rick, which says, do you have to train the data algorithm?
Which algorithm? So yes and no.
I think you're talking about the data API.
So, well, I don't know what data API means, but let me tell you some examples where you do have to train and some examples where you do not need to do training. Recommendations, you do need to provide your data because the recommendations engine will adapt to your data. So therefore, you need to provide it some data and then build the model, right, or train it, right? So that's the first part. There are some other algorithms that do not need to be trained. For instance, text analytics, right? We don't need any additional information, right? Or if we were to create, for instance, an image detector, you know, where you could get a face, detect faces in an image, for instance, right? Those are the types of problems where the data that we will have will work for everybody, right? Faces are the same everywhere, right? So we could generate such an algorithm without you having to provide additional data. So in those cases where we can have data that applies to you, then we can do the training and you don't need to do any training. In those situations where the output is very specific to your business, like recommendations or frequently bought together engine, in those cases you will need to provide some data and train it with your data.
Sure, thanks. So we're almost at the hour now. Thanks for all your questions. And Luis, thanks for your presentation and thanks for answering all the questions. We'll be back in 2 weeks with another topic, another learning session. Keep posting your questions if you have any around this topic on Machine Learning Forum. Follow us on Twitter, ML@MSFT, and we'll announce the next webinar shortly. Thank you so much for joining us today. That's it from us today.
Thank you all. Bye-bye.